We will talk with the co-author of a new book, Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter, during this edition of On the Campaign Trail. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, the 17th of December. Our guest says that only 10 states, one of them being Wisconsin, really matter in the 2016 presidential race, and we'll talk about why the race is already over in 40 states, according to our guest. And we'll welcome your thoughts and questions about this, and wonder if you think your vote matters. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll also make some time to talk about some of the issues making news on the presidential campaign trail as well. Our guest is David Schultz, a professor of political science at Hamline University in St. Paul, Minnesota, co-author of Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. Good morning. Oops, I'm sorry, I didn't have the correct button on. Now, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good, thanks for being with us.
Sure, thank you.
So when you say only 10 states matter, what does that mean exactly? What do you mean by mattering?
Well, what I mean by that is the fact that if we look at the 2016 presidential election, effectively the race is over in 40 of those states plus the District of Columbia. And what I mean by that also is that chances of a Republican candidate for president winning, let's say, New York or California are pretty low. Additionally, a Democratic candidate running in Texas or Alabama or Mississippi, very little chance that they're going to win. And what we've noticed, and probably the listeners have noticed this also, in the last few presidential elections, it seems to come down to a very small number of states where the political advertising is, where the campaign activity is, where all the presidential action is. And so my co-author and I decided to investigate and find out if that perception was true. And we found it was to be accurate, that really over the last 7 presidential elections, it's only a handful of states, and now it's about 10 states that really are the focus of presidential campaigns, states that have a capacity, as our title is, swing states, to perhaps go Republican or Democrat. So we eventually came together with this list, explained how we selected the 10 states, and then tried to explain with sort of in-depth chapters what is unique about those 10 different states. And I'll just run through them quickly so people know who they are. It's Colorado, Iowa, Florida, Ohio, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Virginia, North Carolina, and Wisconsin. Those are the 10 that really are the focus of presidential activity.
You also dive into 2 other states, Missouri and Indiana. Why are you looking at those states then?
Okay, and the reason why we picked those, you're correct. Okay, mm-hmm. Missouri used to be, for about 100 years, a perfect swing state, that if you were looking for a predictor of who would win the presidential race, if you looked at Missouri, that was a great predictor. From literally the beginning of the 20th century through the early part of the 21st century, the state of Missouri went with the winning presidential candidate in every election except for one, and that was in 1956, if I remember correctly, when it voted for Adlai Stevenson as opposed to Dwight Eisenhower. Otherwise, it was a perfect predictor, but since then, it doesn't seem to be a good predictor. It seems to have moved into the Republican camp. And so we looked at that state to find out, again, why. What's changed there? Why was it such a good predictor? Why was it such a good swing state? Then at the same time, we throw Indiana in, because Indiana, which is normally a very reliable Republican state, did vote for Barack Obama in 2008. And we wanted to throw that one in also, just to see, is not only is it perhaps a swinger of the future, but does it tell us something in terms of why states who are not swingers become swingers, along with Missouri, a state that was a swing state, now not becoming one. bad grammar there, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, since we are mainly being heard in Wisconsin, let's look at Wisconsin for the most part right now. The last time Wisconsin voted for a Republican presidential candidate was in 1984.
Correct.
And that's Ronald Reagan. Since then, in the seven elections since then, the Democratic candidate has won. So why isn't Wisconsin considered to be a secure Democratic pickup?
Well, a couple of things here. First is you're absolutely correct. The last seven races, it has gone I won't say solidly Democratic, but it's clearly gone Democratic, which would suggest that it's not a swing state. But in our definition of a swing state, we're looking at sort of four characteristics. You know, one, is it actually flipping? You know, is it flipping between Democrat and Republican? Another is the criteria of is this a place where candidates campaign? And it clearly is. Mm-hmm. We know, and I'll give you some statistics in a minute here, we clearly know that Republican and Democratic candidates are campaigning in Wisconsin. It's also a state that's very close. You know, Al Gore and John Kerry both won the state of Wisconsin by less than 1% of the vote. And so when we look at a variety of criteria, Wisconsin seems to be a state that fits maybe not the first tier like in Ohio or Florida in terms of being a great swing state, but certainly a state that has become very, very close. And given what's happened in Wisconsin state elections, you know, in terms of its gubernatorial elections, in terms of its legislative elections and so forth, a state that Republicans still believe they can eventually win at the presidential level. But it's remained Democratic simply because there still is a slight advantage that goes to I think, Democratic Party representation or Democratic Party membership in the state. And the Democrats have still been able to, at the presidential elections where there's higher turnouts, been able to do a slightly better job mobilizing their base to come out to vote.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk a little bit about next, is why is it that Wisconsin would have a Republican governor, a Republican-controlled state legislature, just about every aspect of state politics Republican, yet we voted for Barack Obama and Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin in the last presidential election.
Yeah, in many ways, not just in Wisconsin, but across the country, the elections for president and sort of elections for governor and in many other offices are really on two different cycles. If we were to draw a map, we would know, not a surprise, that in presidential election years, turnout in Wisconsin is, as is true across the country, is dramatically higher than it is in non-presidential election years. You know, when we don't have as much excitement, and it's usually in those non-presidential election years where we have a lot of the elections for governor and statewide offices, both in Wisconsin and across the country. And the difference in turnout that we know between presidential and non-presidential election years generally is that a lot more Democrats stay home during non-presidential election years. And thus, we really have two different electorates. We have an electorate that shows up during gubernatorial races in Wisconsin, and we have a different electorate that shows up during presidential ones. And that partly produces, I think, the differences that we see in Wisconsin. It certainly doesn't answer all the questions, but that tells us quite a bit in terms of why we sort of have a little bit of this dual personality. But there's also, and we talk about it in the book, there are really sort of two different cultures, you know, political cultures, you know, in Wisconsin. You know, if we use sort of the political science terms, there is this moralistic political culture which sort of believes politics is all about achieving the common good. There's this individualistic culture which believes politics is about self-interest. And Wisconsin's pretty divided there in terms of having these two contending cultures that have been there from the start. Additionally, you know, we can also point to the fact that in many ways, Wisconsin's political affiliations in terms of how people identify themselves are pretty divided. I'll just give you a statistic here. About 24% of those who identify themselves say they consider themselves to be liberal in Wisconsin. 35% say conservative. 40% say moderate. That's almost identical, by the way, to the national numbers. But given those numbers there, that also creates a pretty competitive political environment in Wisconsin. So there's a variety of factors that come to bear in terms of explaining why the state seems to have very different patterns, let's say, for election at the state level versus election at the national level.
Let me hold you there because we have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up next, and then we'll welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, co-author of Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. On this edition of On the Campaign Trail, we are talking with the co-author of Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. And Wisconsin is one of the 10 that matter, according to our guest, political science professor David Schultz. He is a political science professor at Hamline University in St. Paul. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So does it matter to you that Wisconsin is one of the only 10 states that matter in the 2016 presidential race? Our guest says that because of political demographics, the race is already over in 40 states, but it's unclear whether it's over or not in Wisconsin, one of the 10 states considered the 10 states that matter. The other nine: Colorado, Florida, Iowa, Ohio, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, North Carolina, and Virginia. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show if you have a question or an observation on this. We have Gary and Ripon joining us. Hello, Gary.
Good morning. I'm wondering what the implications of this are for our ideas of voting. I mean, if most people are just going to vote the brand regardless of who the candidate is or what the issues and circumstances are, and most of the 2032 election has already been determined, why do we waste time going through all these so-called debates and forums and worrying about who thinks this and who thinks that? It doesn't seem like it's a big waste of time. It doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. So, Professor Schultz, is it a big waste of time?
That raises a really good question, and it does raise questions about sort of democratic legitimacy and about sort of, you know, about the importance of voters. And I'm going to sort of expand upon this, because the reason why we have this phenomena, in part, of why it's over in 40 states, it's a consequence of two things. First, in 48 out of 50 states, including Wisconsin, electoral votes for the presidency are allocated in an all-or-nothing fashion. That is, whichever candidate wins the most popular vote in that state gets all the electoral votes. It's not divided up proportionally. And then second, we know that the vast majority of people who vote will vote their partisan preferences. Democrats vote Democrat, Republican vote Republican. And I say that because, combine the two together, states that have, let's say, overwhelming numbers of Republicans or overwhelming numbers of Democrats, with an electoral college that allocates the votes all or nothing, are going to go Democrat or Republican. It's only in states like Wisconsin where we have a fair number of independent voters that who don't describe themselves as Republican or Democrat, and actually who do vote independent or who make decisions to vote or not, do we actually see the swing phenomena. And so this is troubling. You know, and I talk to my students, for example, and my students, you know, undergraduate students, are highly disturbed by the idea of saying that, you mean in some sense my vote, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know, in terms of in Minnesota, because they'll say it's a solidly Democratic state and therefore for a Republican, it doesn't matter. And I say, yeah, on one hand, it doesn't matter. So I think the listener is absolutely correct in terms of this sense. Now, I'm going to give you and all the listeners three numbers, and this will tell you everything you need to know about the presidential race and really sum it up. And the three numbers that I talk about in my book, 10, 10, 270. 270 is the number of electoral votes you need to be president. Remember, and we remembered this again, or learned this again in 2000, it's not who gets the most popular votes, it's who gets the electoral vote victory. Okay, we know that with that, so it's 10, 10, 270, we know that there are 10% of the voters in 10 states, these 10% of the voters are the swing voters that decide who win the votes in those 10 swing states that get to 270. So I can really make it simple here. 10% of the voters in 10 states in the United States hold the balance of power that determines who gets 270 electoral votes that determines who wins the presidency. That hardly seems like majority rule or fair, as the listener was asking.
Wow, that really is amazing. Put that way, it's a little startling, actually.
Right, and again, just to even put more face to this, is within those 10 states, there's about a dozen counties that matter. For example, in Florida, whoever wins Hillsborough County, which is where Tampa Bay area is, Tampa Bay, that seems to be the decisive county that determines who wins Florida. In Colorado, it's Jefferson or Arapahoe. But the single most important county in the United States, Hamilton County, Ohio, which is where Cincinnati is. Literally, whoever wins Hamilton County, Ohio, wins Ohio. Who wins Ohio wins the presidency. Now, I'm not down to the point of saying, let's figure out how Harry and Louise vote in Hamilton County to figure out the presidency. But in some ways, that's what we're really down to. We're down to understanding that there's only a small number of voters in small geographic areas that really determine the outcome for presidential races in the United States. And again, I find that troubling in the sense that across vast swaths of the United States, it's not really true that it doesn't matter if you vote, because you still have to show up to vote, because if nobody voted, then it would change. But in many ways, the fact that it's only in those few counties, in those few states, among few people, that the fight for the presidency is occurring.
Wow, holy smokes. So do you know offhand of the most important county in Wisconsin, or does Wisconsin have a county that is the bellwether county?
It doesn't seem to really have a particular bellwether county. What's more interesting about Wisconsin is the fact that, and your listeners know this, Wisconsin has lots of distinct political regions in the state. And I used to teach, you know, in the UW system at UW River Falls.
Oh.
I used to teach Wisconsin politics, and we talk about this, is that, you know, Milwaukee County and Dane County are very different than going to places like Rusk County or Polk County, you know, Polk County being along, you know, near the Twin Cities, you know, where I am. And so in the Twin Cities, or rather I should say in Wisconsin, a lot really depends on voter mobilization. You know, the Democrats generally do well, not a surprise. If there's heavy mobilization in Dane County, and especially in sort of the urban areas, you know, Milwaukee proper. And so I could look to perhaps turnout levels in places such as those two counties that give me some indications regarding how well Democrats will do. But we didn't sort of find a particular bellwether county that stood out. It's more about, I'd say, mobilizations within all those different political regions.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with David Schultz, who is a professor of political science at Hamline University in St. Paul, formerly with the UW River Falls, and a co-author of Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. And we are talking about why only 10 states really matter when it comes to the 2016 presidential race. Wisconsin is one of them. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show if you have a question, an observation. David in Cameron is with us now. Hi, David.
Hi. You know, I think in a way you've already answered my question, which is the extent to which your research and research like this would tend to bolster the need for a constitutional amendment on how we elect the president so that everybody's vote counts instead of just sort of, as you say, the 10% in those 10 counties.
Well, I guess we didn't really specifically say that. There is James on Facebook who says we should dump the Electoral College already and go with a straight popular vote. Is that what you're advocating, Professor Schultz?
Well, we don't really sort of take that position. We don't take a position one way or the other in the book. But if I were sort of step back from it and say, you know, what are some of the implications of this? If we truly wanted candidates to visit all 50 states, to really campaign across the country, some changes in the Electoral College are necessary, whether it's completely scrapping the system, which is one possibility. A second possibility, which is entirely within control of each state, is that the Constitution doesn't require states to do an all-or-nothing allocation of electoral votes. Again, 48 out of the 50 states, they do that. The state of Maine and the state of Nebraska, they allocate electoral votes based on who wins in the congressional districts in that state. There's nothing that would prevent Wisconsin or any other state from saying that they're going to allocate their electoral votes proportionally, congressionally, however they want to do it. There's all kinds of possibilities. And one of the ways that we might encourage candidates to campaign in more states would be if states did that. And I actually find it interesting in Wisconsin that even though we pointed out that the Republicans haven't won the state, in the last seven elections, the last time they won it was, 84 with Reagan. I'm actually surprised with Republican governor, Republican legislature, they haven't decided to say, let's change the allocation formula for Wisconsin's 10 electoral votes and do it by congressional district or whatever, because they could do that. They have the majorities to be able to do that, and there's no reason why they couldn't, except maybe they believe that they're going to actually win the state outright sometime, and then they get all 10 electoral votes. But the listener's correct that it raises questions. Now, I want to give a couple of other statistics here, which I think are interesting to underscore how I think the implications of what we're looking at here really, really might raise questions about democracy. Go back to 2012. After the convention, we have this chart that looks at the number of campaign events by Romney and by Obama and their surrogates. Now, post-convention, Ohio receives 73 campaign visits, Florida 40, Virginia 36, Wisconsin's 18. There were only, I think, what's on our list here, 12 states that received any visits whatsoever by the presidential candidates. The other 38, 39 never received a visit whatsoever. And so, if you were in Idaho, a Texas, a New York, or California, you never saw a presidential candidate or a surrogate after the convention. And maybe for a blessing or not, you also saw very few political ads. And I'll let people decide whether that's a blessing or not at some point. But we're looking at candidates who choose not to campaign. Money's not spent there for political purposes. And we also note some research that suggests that the swing states are the ones that between elections seem to get more attention in terms of more leverage for, let us say, federal aid or more discretionary money from presidents because they want to influence those states in the next election. So it has all types of implications. But clearly, stepping back from what we said in our book, it raises questions about the Electoral College. I guess the other thing I want to say too is one of the things that we need to remember from Florida 2000 is we do not have a constitutional right to vote for president of the United States.
What do you mean?
That the Electoral College assigns to, or the Constitution assigns to the state legislature the power to determine the composition of the Electoral College, and the Constitution still says that legislatures can either directly pick themselves the members of the Electoral College to select or to pick members of the Electoral College to pick the President of the United States, or simply by the grace of state legislatures, starting in the mid-19th century, they let popular elections determine it. And so on election day, when we go to vote, I'm forgetting what the date is. I'm going to make up one. When we go to vote on November 5th, 2016, I can't remember what the election date is, what really happens is that we go to vote to select the electors who select the President of the United States. Justice Scalia and the Supreme Court reminded us in Bush v. Gore in 2000, we have no constitutional right as individuals to vote for President of the United States.
Let's take a call from Robert in Waukesha. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I think that splitting the Electoral College is a terrible idea if it isn't done across the board. In other words, if only a portion of the states do it, then those states instantly become irrelevant. Take, say, for example, California has 54 votes, or so 56, I forget exactly.
Sure.
And then it typically goes for the Democrats. If they split their vote, now it's 26 and 25. All of a sudden, they don't matter at all. If you can keep your side, let's just split this down, Republican or Democrat, if you can keep your states and then cause the other states to split their vote, you'll win every time, all the time.
And I thought Robert was also going to bring up, because you mentioned you were surprised, Professor Schultz, that Wisconsin had not moved to change the allocation of electoral votes since it has a Republican majority and can do that. This has come up, and there's been, especially Democrats, not liking the idea,
right,
saying this is an ALEC idea, and this is something that conservatives want because it will help them win the presidency.
Right, and I think Democrats have expressed that concern, but also I think, you know, sometimes cynically in terms of saying that this is a state, Wisconsin, that has still gone consistently Democrat, and therefore they make that argument so that it will really continue to favor Democrats. But I think now Republicans may be thinking that instead of splitting the state, that given the fact that it is Republican-controlled at the state level, and I think there's the belief, and maybe it'll turn out in 16, that they're going to finally break through and win Wisconsin, that why split it? Because if they split it, then they're still not going to get all the electoral votes. The Democrats will get some. Let's keep it the way it is, and then we'll capture all 10. And that was sort of the debate that happened in Pennsylvania a few years ago, where when the Republicans were controlling the state house and the legislature, they debated splitting it, and then they said, no, we're not going to split it, and backed off because they thought, if we split it and we now think we're going to take this state, we're going to lose some electoral votes. And so it's contrary to the caller. You know, a state like California would suddenly matter even more if it's split, because what would happen at this point is that if Republicans could go there and pick up 25 or 30 electoral votes, as opposed to having no chance of getting them now, they're going to go and campaign there. And so I actually think in a lot of states, if they were to split them and do it by some type of, you know, let's say, proportionality or something, those states would become more competitive. But currently, the current campaign strategy right now, and why I think Democrats and Republicans sort of like it, is that they don't have to campaign in all the states. They know they can bank Texas or California or New York or Minnesota or whatever it is, and they can narrow their focus to just a few states and not have to worry about those other states after the convention.
Yeah. We have news in just 1 minute. I want to get a little bit of a tease in here. Do you, based on your research, David Schultz, think that the Republican candidate can win Wisconsin in 2016?
Okay, good.
All right, well, we'll let you think about that over news, and then we will come back. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with David Schultz, a professor of political science at Hamline University in St. Paul. He is co-author of Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. And he says that Wisconsin is one of the 10 that matters, that it is a swing state, and in 40 other states in the U.S., the race is already over because of political demographics. We wonder what you think, what questions you have. Maybe you have a thought on whether the Electoral College should be changed, whether we should go to the popular vote instead. Maybe you think the way it is just fine. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking about why only 10 states matter in the 2016 presidential race, Wisconsin being one of those 10 states, during this edition of On the Campaign Trail. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is David Schultz, a professor of political science at Hamline University in St. Paul, co-author of Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. And I asked before news, Professor Schultz, for you to give us your analysis of Wisconsin and whether in 2016 it looks like a Republican candidate could conceivably win, even though a Republican candidate has not won Wisconsin since 1984. And preliminary polling is showing, at least now, Hillary Clinton in the lead over any Republican candidate. What do you think?
Well, but I don't think it's likely, given who seems to be the front runners for the Republican Party right now. And the reason why I mention that is that at the end of the day, you know, we also point out in our book is that despite the fact that we have pretty good predictions regarding how 40 states would go, if one of the two parties nominates a candidate very far out of the mainstream, or just a candidate that's not very good, that will change everything completely. And one of the things we talk about in our book is that if a state, for example, or rather if one of the national parties nominates a candidate that is, let us say, far more conservative or far more liberal than the average voter in the state, that can change the voting patterns in the state. And so I mentioned that because if I look at the candidates, you know, on the Republican side and look at the Democratic side, assume for the sake of argument right now that it's Secretary Clinton is the Democratic nominee. And clearly things can change, but let's assume that she's the nominee. She is probably closer to the average voter in Wisconsin in terms of, we call it median politics, in terms of being, you know, if we were market from liberal to conservative, she is closer than the front runners of Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. And so having said that, the Republicans may be prepared to nominate a candidate far more conservative than the average voter in Wisconsin, therefore handing the race to somebody like Hillary Clinton. On the other hand, perhaps, let's say, if it were a Bush-Clinton race, that might make it far more competitive and make it possible for the Republicans to pick up the state. So right now, based on what the polls are telling us, I would say that the Republicans are on the verge of nominating a candidate who probably would not win Wisconsin in 2016.
Interesting. Well, what about the other states that matter? Is it kind of the same situation? Does it look like the GOP prospects for 2016 are, high, low, or in between, based on the only 10 states that matter?
This is clearly a problem for them because one of the things, again, I'll tell the listeners is when you see polls. Always be skeptical of polls to start with, but aggregate national polls of public opinion and who people favor for the presidency really are meaningless. What you really want to look at are the polls in those swing states. You know, how are the candidates doing in the Ohios, the Floridas, and Wisconsins? And when you start to look at the swing states, things become much more interesting. If we were having this conversation about a month ago, let's say 6 weeks ago, Hillary Clinton was having a very difficult time in several of the swing states because she doesn't poll very well with swing voters, independent voters. And she was beating Donald Trump, but just about nobody else at that point. And so had the Republicans, again, 6 weeks ago, nominated somebody such as a Chris Christie or somebody, and the election were held in those critical swing states, Clinton would have been in danger of losing. But in the last 6 weeks, even in these swing states, Secretary Clinton has solidified her lead. Now, it doesn't mean that she will win, doesn't mean that things won't tighten, and they're competitive. But right now, Secretary Clinton seems to be leading against most of the major Republican candidates, even in those critical swing states.
Let's go to Stephen in Madison, who's been waiting. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is a really interesting discussion to me. It's not I'm glad that you're writing about it and talking about it. It's not a new discussion by any means. And I've always wondered, and I guess I'm not sure if I agree with the premise, because it's kind of like when you say that, well, you know, California doesn't matter. It's kind of like saying that if I buy a stereo for $51, the first $50 that I pull out of my pocket don't actually matter. It's that final dollar that really buys the stereo. And that just doesn't make, logically, that doesn't make any sense to me. And the second part of my question is, I wonder if, I know that this is something we can observe and see that it might be true, but what I'm interested in is why, and I'm wondering if our first-past-the-post election system, that not really many people talk about the problems with that, it's not an issue with the Electoral College, it's an issue with the first-past-the-post system, and that could be quite solved quite easily by just having an instant runoff elections.
All right, what about that?
Okay, first off, I think the caller is correct on one level when I say that 40 states don't matter. I mean, partly that's an over-exaggeration. That, yes, at the end of the day, what happens in California, New York, Minnesota, Texas, and that does matter. They matter because they still create electoral votes. What we say in terms of why only 10 matter is really that the balance of power really is in these remaining 10 states. And so I will concede that and say that that's absolutely correct, that you don't want to say that it doesn't matter, people should stay home, we shouldn't hold elections in those other 40 states, but we have pretty good sense of what the outcome is going to be. Now, in terms of alternative voting systems, I teach election law in law school also, and I talk about this, that, you know, that United States, you know, we have what's really called, again, first past the post, whoever gets the most votes wins. We have generally single-member districts. We don't have proportional voting. There are lots of different types of voting schemes for allocating representatives. Now, I doubt you could have things such as proportional voting or multi-member districts for president, because we only elect one president. But could we think about alternative systems in terms of ranked choice voting for selecting other candidates for different types of offices? Clearly, yes. Again, I live in St. Paul, Minnesota. St. Paul and Minneapolis both have ranked choice voting for their city councils. And so I think a whole different discussion is clearly about different ways that we hold elections and how we select people. And even the discussion from two or three callers back talking about getting rid of the Electoral College and saying going to direct popular vote, that's still getting at the question of what's the best election system, the set of election rules for how we want to achieve representation in democracy. And again, if we look around the world, lots of countries which we would consider to be democratic, you know, the Englands, the Germanys, the Frances, and that, have different ways of voting and different ways of allocating votes to select representatives.
Let's go to John in Windsor next. Hi, John.
Hi. Well, first of all, we're a republic, not a democracy. But secondly, my concern is that if you go to the popular vote, then you're going to get exactly the opposite. Wisconsin becomes irrelevant, because the relevant states will be New York, California, Texas, Florida, Michigan, and Ohio.
So is that right? If we went to popular vote, then nobody would come to Wisconsin.
Not necessarily, because even within those states of Wisconsin, let's say within California and New York, people would go there because there are still millions of Republicans in those two states. There are millions of Democrats in Texas, and therefore, straight popular vote, it would be worth going to campaign in those states. Now, the listener is correct that in some sense that because Wisconsin is certainly not one of the most populous states, certainly not one of the least ones, it might not be at the top of the list in terms of the first place that people campaign. But the straight popular vote would create different patterns of swing states. It might create different patterns of campaign activity. And so even if we do switch, It's certainly not going to be guaranteeing that candidates campaign in every state. I can still see candidates making choices and saying that they may not go to the South and North Dakotas, for example, because there's not a lot of people living there, or the Wyomings. But that also might depend on how close of an election it is, where every vote might matter. So changing the institutional design may or may not affect will affect voting patterns, but exactly how, we're not sure. But I think the listener's correct in one sense, that if we got rid of the Electoral College, it is possible, certainly not guaranteeing it, it's possible Wisconsin might not receive the same type of attention as it does right now.
You know, we're almost out of time. You'd mentioned a little earlier that if Republican primary voters go for a conservative candidate like Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, that the prospects for Hillary Clinton to win the presidency is higher based on your research and these demographics. Does that mean the Republican National Committee is going to do this brokered convention because it fears that might happen?
I think that's what they fear at this point, is that they're on the verge of nominating a candidate that might not be competitive not only in the presidential races, but also have an impact down on the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives, perhaps state races. So two quick observations here. You know, first is that that if you have a different Republican candidate, and maybe it's not any of the current field, but if you had a different Republican candidate, Hillary Clinton is vulnerable because, again, there's a lot of swing voters who are not enamored by her, and she carries a lot of baggage with her, which I think is an issue. But the second concern here is that, can they orchestrate a brokered convention? Well, the way the rules for the Republican primaries and caucuses are set up this year, if Donald Trump gets off, for example, to a very quick start, and he goes into several campaigns, for example, Florida is an all or nothing in terms of the allocation of their delegates. By the time it gets to the convention, it could very well be a situation where, I'll say, Trump has it sewn up, and there is no prospects of a broker convention. The only chance of a broker convention is if there is no candidate who gets enough of the votes during the primaries to win it on the first round.
We have just 30 seconds left, so I will leave it there. We'll have to have you back. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Joy.
David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University in St. Paul, Minnesota, co-author of Presidential Swing States, Why Only 10 Matter. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Elizabeth Delacquest for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. We will talk Star Wars fever in our next hour.